This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin, and welcome to another episode of the Toastmasters podcast. Speeches, presentations, movies, books, songs, you name it, they all have a title. But is it a good title? Our guest today will enlighten us with what that means and why it's important that you pay attention to this when you create your content. Our guest today is Leslie Stevenson. She is an international keynote speaker and corporate communications coach. She's a distinguished Toastmaster. She's been a Toastmaster for 16 years and a member of two Swiss corporate Toastmasters clubs, Google Zurich Toastmasters and UBS Rhetoric Club Opficon. She's placed twice in the semifinals at the Toastmasters International Speech Competition, and she's written an article that appeared in the April 2021 issue of the Toastmaster magazine entitled Titles That Talk. Leslie Stevenson, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Titles That Talk. It's an interesting topic, and quite often we see a lot about introductions and structures of speeches or presentations, but I've seen very little written about the topic of titles. Please tell us a little bit about why this particular topic is very important and what triggered you to write about this one.
Well, I think that titles have been important to me since I was 8 years old. When I was eight, I won a contest for a competition where you had to write an essay, and my title was Lost in the City. Now, that's not actually life-changing or even life-threatening, but for an eight-year-old, it was somehow special, or it appeared to be, to the judges of the contest. And since then, I've been a title fetishist because I've seen how important titles can be. They really do tell the audience so much about the speaker, even before they open their mouths, or about the writer before they actually start to read. And I think that titles are highly underestimated in the sense of their importance.
Why would you think that? I mean, I think for many people, you know, when we look on the shelf at a book or we look at the movie listings, we look at an agenda for an upcoming conference, the first thing we look at is the title. So why is it that they're underestimated?
This is very interesting that you've come up with a conference, because a couple of years ago, my company did some research into the conference habits of a lot of our corporate executives. We asked them if they were busy and they were going to a conference where there were multiple activities happening at the same time, this sort of simultaneous engineering where you get six different speakers in the same hour, how they would make their decision about what to go to. A huge number, I mean, comparatively huge, we're talking 60 to 75% of 3,000 or 4,000 people that we asked said that if they were too busy to read the program notes, they would make that decision on the basis of the title alone. I think it tells us that instead of just focusing on content and putting in some sort of title at the end, that we need to have the title working with us parallel to content as we prepare.
This is really interesting because I'm thinking these days we are inundated with information. We're spending so much time right now online that when it comes to news or events or what have you, we're not really reading, we're scanning. And I know myself, I will scan for titles. In the article, you mentioned that less than 10% of the content, now, I'm not sure if you're referring to speeches or presentations, have effective titles. I would think it might have been maybe a quarter or a third, but only 10%. Where did that statistic come from, and why is it such a small number?
That statistic comes from a combination of the titles of presentations that I get to evaluate, and certainly also through Toastmasters. We would be talking here over the past 5 to 10 years, multiple thousands of titles. And I'm sorry to say, I find most of them fairly deadly boring. And there are reasons for that. Usually they're too long. If they're not too long, they have very little to do with what's actually in the content. And I think particularly the problem is that people don't work well with words. There's no effort made to perhaps do something a little quirky, humorous, use alliteration to make that title something that will give people a buzz even before they read what you've written or listen to what you're going to say. That's my experience.
You check for titles, and of course you share this information with your clients and others, and you enlighten them about this fact that perhaps their title may not be as effective as it could be. I'm not sure whether you're just blunt with them or not, but when you tell them, for the most part, this title is just no good, it's boring, it doesn't work, how do they react? What do they say?
You know, I don't think that a lot of people feel they need to make an excuse. I think in most cases, they just haven't been aware of the importance of the title and the impact that it has. I mean, if you think back yourself, Greg, to your school days, if you had to write an essay or composition or something, who gave you feedback on the title? Well, I can't really speak for most of us, but I will say me and other people that I've discussed this with didn't get feedback on a title. They got feedback on the content and whether they'd asked the question and so on. But I think especially in industries that I work in, that's mainly the financial and pharmaceutical industries, there is so much data and people overkill with tsunamis of text, and they tend to start that tsunami with a lengthy title that makes people think, oh my God, do I really have to read this?
As you mentioned it, I was picturing myself writing my composition in my little composition book, and I think I was probably chastised for the most part on my penmanship, or perhaps lack of penmanship.
Here again, there's a lovely corollary. I often speak to people who've written speeches or articles that are too wordy, and their titles are also too wordy, about how things were at school. And I found out that almost all of us who had to go through this pruning process did the same thing. When we were at school and we had an exam or we had some type of assignment and we didn't really know a lot about what we should know, we tended to write far too much in the hope that enough of what was there would be correct for us to get a few extra points. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit the same with the title. Sometimes people just can't make up their minds what to do. So they think a longer title will at some level capture the content that follows. It doesn't. It just makes the audience think, uh-oh.
I think sometimes what people try to do is they try to compress the summary into the title.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it doesn't work. It's like with a presentation that is given, and it should really just be a handout. The same type of thing applies here. The title has to be a wonderful type of cameo, 3 to 5 words for a spoken presentation, and maybe 1 or 2 more if you're writing, because then people can go back and reread it if they've forgotten it. But it has to somehow incorporate the essence of what you want to say. It's not the full summary. If you try to do that in a title, you've really lost the game before you've started.
This is a perfect time to talk a little bit about titles. You touched upon the length, and in the article, you make reference to Rick Haynes, who did research on the speech titles on the World Championship speeches. He had indicated that typically 1 to 5 word titles. Many were 1. Some were 3 to 5. Is there a sweet spot?
I don't think there is a sweet spot, but Rick and I certainly had fun when we were doing that work, because it really became very, very clear. All these world champions and finalists had given themselves quite a lot of trouble to come up with a title that would be memorable. Mm-hmm. If you're speaking at a conference or in a contest, you do want people to be able to remember your title afterwards and say, oh man, wasn't he great? And what was the title? This and this. If you give us a 10-word title, it's unlikely. We found literally that practically all the year's winners that we looked at, which went back over a period of 15 years, had used titles that were 1 to 5 words.
Wow. I remember Darren's. I remember LaShonda. In fact, I was in Calgary in 2008 when she gave her speech.
I missed hers, but I heard Darren's, and I'm in the ouch. Great stuff.
It's funny because once you've heard it, that's the key. Whenever I hear, ouch, someone says something that you don't like to hear and you go, ouch, it brings you back to Darren's speech and him falling. Did he stay down too long?
Darren's speech and the title really have become icons in the Toastmasters world. Not every speech suits a one-word title, and not every speech is going to suit falling down flat in your face. It was absolutely brilliant what he did there. But I think the point here is that he managed in one word to convey the essence of what he was going to be speaking about and what he did speak about. And other people may need a couple of words more. That crystal clarity that belongs in the title needs to give the audience an idea of where you're going to take them. Where is this journey going to go?
Absolutely. And for those of you who are not familiar with Darren, it's Darren LaCroix, and I believe he's the 2001 world champion. And LaShonda Rundles was the 2008 world champion of public speaking, and she presented in Calgary. In the article, we're talking about length, but again, it's not just speeches and presentations. You had mentioned that longer titles for the media, that's more acceptable. And why would that be?
I think for written articles, many people will accept longer titles because they know the reader can go back and reread if they need to. The problem with the title of vocalized performance is that people hear that title usually just once and then not again. So if they didn't get it because there were too many words, you are out of luck. Even so, though, Greg, I made the experience on a biography that I wrote here in Switzerland some years ago of a very famous patron of music who was probably equally well known in the United States, a man called Paul Zacher. I had a longer title for that book, and I was asked by one of our big papers here to write an article on the work I was doing on his life. He was an extraordinary man. And I gave them a longer title, which they cut mercilessly. My title had been, "You Can Do What You Want to Do," because that was the English translation of a quote that had come from this man's mother. And I thought it would be nice to keep it. But a lot of reasons for keeping a title are nice, but they don't sell. They're just not good enough. And when that article came out in the paper, they had changed it to Sein Plan auf Deutsch in German, and in English it was his plan. First of all, I was annoyed because it made him sound very mercenary, but I had to say afterwards, well, actually he was pretty mercenary, and that title probably was more effective, certainly for selling the newspaper, than mine had been.
I had a weekly column in a daily newspaper. In fact, I've written over 4,000 articles.
Wow.
My titles wouldn't necessarily get cut. In fact, in most cases, they were changed. So I had no control. And at some point, I got to a point where it was like, okay, I just won't even put a title because they're going to change it anyway.
Well, that's like the Financial Times. The Financial Times, I know because I did some title work with one of their very good journalists here in Europe. For quite a long time, we did some courses and some training, and titles came into that training. He told me the Financial Times had a group of people who did nothing else but create good titles for the journalists' articles, and that it had become extremely rare for a title that the journalist wrote at the top of their article to be accepted. It was usually changed. So there you are, same situation.
But I'm sure you've run into a situation where they've changed it, but they've totally misunderstood the purpose of the article.
Oh, goodness, yes. That's one of the things about being a journalist or submitting writing to various publications that you just at some level have to accept, unless you have a very special agreement. If people want to change it, even if they don't really get it, it's sometimes not possible to do anything about it. And then you can grit your teeth and move on.
I guess in all fairness, they are trying to sell newspapers. And of course, the editors can't necessarily be experts in every particular field.
No, exactly.
And when it's a publication where you're submitting the day before or the same day, there's not often an opportunity to be able to change it.
No, there's a lot of stress due to time constraints. And I've seen this when I've done some work for the London Times. But that doesn't change the underlying message here. And the underlying message is, whether it's written or spoken, get the essence of what you're saying into a concise and compelling title, because that is going to catch your listeners or your readers' attention. And at the end of the day, that's what you want.
Yeah, that makes sense. I'm thinking back, I participated in the humorous speech contest in 2002. I gave a speech about the trials and tribulations of an individual trying to wade through the sea of technobabble, trying to buy a computer. Now, of course, the computer technology is very different today as it was back then. So what I ended up doing was I had a very similar speech. The original speech was entitled "Smile, You're Not Alone." Yet I ended up being coerced, I guess, or shamed into participating in our humorous speech contest about 6 or 7 years ago after spending about 8 years on the district executive. And I wanted to use the same concept, but because technology has changed, it was no longer relevant, but yet the examples were perfect. Mm-hmm. Or so I thought anyway. So I decided, I ended up changing the title to "How I Became the Gadget Guy." So I was able to transport people back to that time period, as opposed to giving it today as a current speech, and it really wouldn't work as well.
I like that title very much.
I placed third. I didn't win, but I came in third out of about roughly nine. We had 300 clubs, so I would say about 900 people. So that wasn't too bad.
Well, good for you.
So getting back to some titles, I'm just curious. Quite often you see titles that are a play on words or a cliche, or the other day I was doing a search on titles and I saw one that was called Tequila Mockingbird, right? It was a play on To Kill a Mockingbird, the movie. Sure. And it was subtitled Cocktails with a Literary Twist. So, what are your thoughts on creating titles? What are some of the things that you want to do?
Well, first of all, I think energy in titles is very important. You don't want to create a deadpan title for something where you want people to be energized. One of the things you can do here is to use alliteration. I love alliteration because I think that you can play with words. You can play with the color and the sound of words. And this is a great tool to use, especially in your own language. However, it's something that doesn't often work so well for people who are presenting in a second or a third or a fourth language, because they don't always know the games that we can play. They can, but it's not as easy to do in a foreign language. People sometimes take parts of quotes, like the example that you took before with the title taken and moved on from a film title. We can get help. That's not stealing. There's nothing wrong with that, but it just has to be that the title matches the expectations that your content creates. And this is an important point to make just here where you've mentioned this. I think that what sometimes happens is that people fall in love with a title. They use that title even though it doesn't really relate to their content, and that's not going to work. Titles set up expectations, just like a billboard does. And although a good title will not necessarily guarantee a good speech, it certainly helps if it is closely aligned to the content. And I've seen a lot of people make shipwreck if they have created this wonderful fantasy title and it just doesn't go with what they've got to say. We have to be very careful of that. No matter how creative you've been, make sure when you've got that title that the content of what you are creating is going to work with it. And otherwise, you're going to have to change either the content or the title.
What process do you go through when you're creating a title? Maybe just take me through an example of something that you created and how you came up with the title.
I have two pathways. One, I greatly prefer. I can be sitting on a bus and a title will sometimes just jump at me. For instance, like you, I've been in a district humorous contest, and I'm very proud to say won a district contest. And the title of that was not mind-blowing. It was just Sweet, Sweet Revenge. But it was very, very short, and it jumped at me on a bus while I was traveling somewhere in Zurich. other titles have jumped out at me before I've even decided what to do with them. This often happens for me with training titles. I've got training, a virtual training gig that I do for a lot of companies on using Zoom, and it's called Virtual Vitality. Now, that's alliteration. It's also short, and it also jumped out at me when I was outside walking my cat, which I do every night. It's like people often say to me, they get good titles or they get good ideas for speeches when they're washing their hair or they're standing under the shower. Sometimes something will jump at you. And here's my message on this. Please, if you're in a stage where you're creating content for a speech or a book or something like that, make sure that you have paper with you. I'm working on a book at the moment, and the other night, in a very strange situation, a brilliant idea came to me, and I was tired, and I said to myself, I'm going to wait until tomorrow. Do you think that I have found my way back to that brilliant idea yet?
Nope.
It may still happen, but this is the problem. So that's one thing. It often happens that it just comes to me, and that's always been a great gift, and it happens fairly regularly. The other thing, if I'm working and I can't find a title, I do freestyle creative writing. I take out a piece of paper, never my computer for this. It needs paper. Maybe for younger Toastmasters or writers who are only, you know, used to working digital, then it may be not a problem for them to work on their computers. And on that piece of paper, I will write just absolutely random. Every crazy title that comes to my mind, and a lot that may have nothing to do with the content. So an example, Blue Velvet, Naughty Girls, Wet Water, you know, whatever is there, I will literally just do stream of consciousness for 5 or 10 minutes. And it's amazing that almost every time, somewhere in there, there is the title or there is something that will become the title. I have found no better way to do this, and I often work with that little exercise in training when I'm helping people find titles and they're having difficulty. Then we do this random exercise, and it's great fun, and it's wonderful to see what comes out of it.
That's awesome. I know when Ryan and I record our podcasts, what we typically do is we will write down some working titles ahead of time, but sometimes we don't know what will come out of a conversation when we're doing the interview. And sometimes during the interview, something just stands out and said, this is what the title we need to use. We also try to avoid reusing the exact same title that was used, perhaps if we're making reference to an article, just so that there's no confusion. It seems to work for us, or at least we hope it does.
Oh, look, it does. That's a very good strategy, because very often I have also had a working title, and as you move forward, you see that it's going to change. For instance, this biography that I wrote, I had no idea as I was working through that, and that was a long year project, what the end title would be. But as I was writing, finally, after all the research that I'd done, the title Symphony of Dreams just dropped in my lap. And that's the title the book had and sold under, and the same in a German translation. Now, at the beginning, I had a much longer and more boring title, which, as you so aptly put it, would not have worked for a public who didn't have the background to this man that I had. That does happen, and we have to then have the courage to say, okay, great, that title I had, the working title, it was okay as a working title, but it's out now, this is better, let's go with it.
What do you think of the titles we often hear? They often start with how to or why you should, and then also ones that say top 10 things or the top 3 things to do.
Yeah, you see them too often, and I'm going to be a bit tough here. It gets very boring. When I see a book that has one of those titles on it, or an article or a podcast, something like that, I sometimes don't go in and listen on the basis of that title being so overused in my head that I don't find it interesting. We've got the same thing, you know, Stephen Covey had the 7 Habits to Highly Successful People. Since then, lots of speakers and trainers do that. I've got one single training gig where I have a number. I had it very early, and it's an 8, not a 7, not a 10. 10, it's an 8, which isn't very common, but I never use it otherwise because I just think it's really overused and I think people are tired of it.
When you Google how to do something, that's what ranks really high are things that have numbers in it, like lists, like David Letterman and his top 10 lists.
Yeah. This is, again, it's personal taste. For me, it doesn't work much anymore because I've seen those lists too often. And I think there are other ways to go. If people have success with it and if that's what the public wants, well, okay, no problem there.
Just wondering, Leslie, are there a few no-nos, a few things that people should absolutely avoid?
Yes, I think it's very, very problematic to put punctuation into titles, especially speech titles. First of all, in a spoken title, people very often don't announce your title the way you might like it to be announced. If you have an exclamation mark, if you have a question mark, you might not get it. See if there's a way to create the title without that punctuation, because then you don't run a risk. Same thing happens with written articles. A lot of editors of newspapers and journals will not allow the titles to have punctuation in it, especially question marks. They feel that means that the writer is sitting on the fence and not showing clear expertise to the audience. Now, I know a lot of people disagree with this. A lot of people say to me, yes, but it sounds great to have a question. If it sounds great to you, use it. And sometimes it will work, as with any of these things. But sometimes it won't. And those things that I've just mentioned will be the reasons.
With all due respect, I have to slightly beg to differ. Perhaps maybe I just like living dangerously.
Absolutely no problem. I've used question marks myself. And lots of people do disagree with this. But I think that I've been impacted as a journalist, particularly writing articles, which I've sometimes given in London Times, whatever it was, with a question mark, and it's been removed. But I know, why not? None of the things that I say here are gospel, Greg. I think it's important for people to experiment and make up their own minds about these things. What I've seen, though, is that these titles and the things I'm saying here have often worked for a lot of the people that I train. And therefore, I'm trying to do best practice here, the things that I've seen working well for people.
So I guess it boils down to it being more of an art than a science.
Nicely put. Well, it is an art. You can play with titles and you can spend an awful long time on titles, and it can actually be worth every second of the time that is spent.
I had written down that the article I had written for the January 2021 issue of the Toastmaster magazine is entitled, "Is There a Podcast in Your Future?" Question mark.
That works for me, for heaven's sake. Like I said, it's not written in blood. It's not written in stone. These are tendencies. I'm trying to give our listeners good reasons for thinking before they just come up with a question and put it out as to whether there might be for their particular speech or article a better title.
As our time comes to an end, I want to thank you for being on the program, for enlightening us about the importance of titles and why we need to pay attention to them. Leslie, if you could please share with our audience, where can people find you or get a hold of you if they want to find out a little bit more about titles and a little bit more about what you do?
Well, the best for them is to go to my website, which is www.lesliestevenson.com, email info@lesliestevenson.com. I am, as you've already introduced me, a trainer and a coach, as well as a speaker. And I have a double life because the other life is spent as a project leader in Ethiopia. And last year, there was a lengthy article in Toastmasters magazine about the work that I do there. People will be able to find me through those channels.
Excellent. And we can certainly put a link in the show notes to those.
Great.
Leslie Stevenson, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for being on the program.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.